Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Are the winds of change finally blowing in New Jersey's deer hunting scene? We shall see. In the upcoming months. Hey, you're inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Week of September 2nd and 3rd. Okay, belated Happy New Year. Yesterday, the statewide special Canada Goose September season opens, going to run through the 30th, and the Railbird season opens, Clappers, Virginia, and Sora Rails. A lot of fun on those marshes, but back to the deer. NJ Fish and Wildlife is conducting three deer hunting forums, north, central, and south, on ideas how to make deer hunting regulations less complicated and possibly, maybe, hallelujah, less expensive. Okay, now there's going to be your voice should be heard. Your influence counts, people. Use it. As the late, great Bob Grant used to say, make your voice be heard. Democracy is not a spectator sport. Okay, the first meeting is going to be upcoming very soon, September 7th, up there at the Pequest Trout Hatchery in Oxford, New Jersey. It's Route 46, 605 Pequest Road. In the central region, September 28th, also at 6:30, at the Rutgers Eco Complex, 1200 Florence Columbus Road in Bordentown. And in the south, October 5th at 6:30 p.m. at the Batstow Village State Park Visitor Center, 31 Batstow Road in Hamilton. A lot of topics are going to be covered. I just hope from my end that they're not going to do it. Will they do it? Who knows? I'm going to say a little later on in the show, I hope they do it. Get rid of these insipid antler point restrictions. Again, antler point restrictions, people, you know how I feel. You want to not shoot anything with a certain size or whatever, too small. Lease a bunch of property, put your food plots, or do whatever, and have at it. Don't block my access to public land insofar as we don't think that's a quality deer and you can't shoot it. BS to that. I mean, that is absolutely crazy. Hey, mark on your calendar again, Saturday, October 14th at 9 a.m. It's going to be the annual Sporting Clays fundraiser shoot for the New Jersey Outdoor Alliance at the incredible Red Wing Sporting Clays on Suey's Landing Road in Port Republic, right off exit 48 southbound on the Garden State Parkway. $75 donation includes a whole bunch of stuff, 100 round of clays, lunch, drinks, a free t-shirt, the whole bit. Go to njoa.org. to find out more about it. I'm going to have to start to swing that little 20. I don't know, man. If I'm going to be doing this Railbird stuff, been a couple of years I've done that, man. That is going to be a challenge. Hey, speaking of Brad, we're going to be talking soars in the next segment with a soar rail hunting veteran named Joe Pencala. After that, we have John Ertle, UBNJ, coming on, talking about the mentored youth hunt. It's going to be on the Youth Bow Hunting Day. And I'm going to wrap it up. New Jersey trapping education courses are starting in a couple of weeks. Joining us on the line will be Ron Jones, ACP, Rednecks Pride Outdoors, veteran trapping. He's a wildlife control agent, all about the trapping experience in New Jersey. Grab that cup. Grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. But before I go, I'm telling you, man, before I go, have to make this known. September issue of the Fisherman magazine. Fantastic. Cover to cover. Again, I pounce on this. Jim Hutchinson Jr.'s editor's log on page 3. Oh, it's you? I laughed out loud at that one because I know who he was speaking to. And also his article, feature article on page 30, NOAA, a.k.a. NOAA Bombshell, Angler Effort Surveys Still Flawed. And these are making the regulations, et cetera, this organization, et cetera. You are not going to find a better fishing news hound than Hutch, period. Check out his editor's log and his feature article. Okay, man, be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. Whew, a lot of stuff going on.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM, South Jersey's talk station.
You have the choice. Whether it's going out to dinner or ordering takeout at a local restaurant or buying that new outfit from a local boutique, those choices help to put money back in your community. And Town Square Media South Jersey puts a spotlight on local businesses. Piccalilli Inn, the original Piccalilli Inn. Visit them on Facebook or at piccalilli.com for their pick specials. Nobody beats the Piccalilli. Route 206 in Chemung.
Dr. Lyle M. Back. For everything from skincare to cosmetic surgery, go to ilovelyleback.com.
Filling Marble and Tile Outlet on Philadelphia Avenue and Route 30 in Egg Harbor City. Visit fillingmarble.com.
Jenkins Plumbing and Heating. Call Jenkins for heating and air conditioning installation, service and maintenance, plumbing or drain cleaning service. service, 609-641-6440 or JenkinsPlumbingAndHeating.com.
Ambient Comfort Heating and Cooling Professionals at AmbientComfortNJ.com. Thank you for supporting these great local businesses from Town Square Media, South Jersey.
Are you already doing digital advertising sales? Do you know all about targeted displays, social media marketing, the latest in SEM, and behavioral targeting? If so, you could be Town Square Media's new advertising sales star. We are looking for passionate sales professionals to join our media and digital advertising team. If consulting and connecting local businesses with their ideal audience for growth sounds exciting, well, let's have a conversation about you working for Town Square Media. Right now is the perfect time to join our team as an advertising account executive. Our comp package is amazing, with unlimited earning potential, including base salary, mobile phone, auto package, 401k match, and more, along with world-class training and plenty of room for growth. If you're competitive, driven, and have the ability to communicate great ideas, we want to hear from you. Reach out to Michael Rubel, Market President, at 609-910-5249 or visit careers.townsquaremedia.com. Town Square Media is an equal opportunity employer.
Attention, small business owners. Looking for new ways to grow your business that won't break the bank? What if I told you it all starts with just two easy steps? Step one, stop wasting precious time and money on leads that are being shared with your competition. Step two, speak with the experts at Town Square Interactive, delivering digital marketing solutions perfectly tailored to your business. You'll get the people and the platform to get in front of more local customers, all for one affordable monthly rate. The best part? No more sharing leads. Your ideal customer will come directly to you. Ready to get started? Go to townsquarelocal.com to use our free traffic estimator and see how many local customers your business could be reaching right now. See why we've been trusted by more than 100,000 small businesses. Go to townsquarelocal.com. That's townsquarelocal.com. And there you can use our free traffic estimator and see how many local customers your business could be reaching right now. Start growing your business today. townsquarelocal.com.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Remember last week we had on Ted Nichols with the prospectus for the September Canada Goose season. Teddy and I talked a little bit off air about rail birds. I love my clapper rails. We did mention soras. Again, an entirely, you know, still members of the rail bird family, I guess. I don't get into the taxonomy and all that other stuff, but clappers on the salt marshes, a lot of fun. One minute, you're, you know, I like to go on like the new moon, or the full moon now with the flood. Now it's a waning full moon. You get a flood tide going in. The railbirds have to get up. If you don't have a dog, it's fine. You can get up. You can like flush them. Finding them is another matter. But a lot of fun hunting. Soar is a different matter. They are up there. It's more of a freshwater, I guess you'd say a freshwater rail species. Came across a fascinating article written by a gentleman named Joel Pencala. I said, that name sounds familiar, man. That name sounds familiar. His dad used to be who I happened to meet, happenstance last year, at Arita's of all places. Joe Pencala, he was a wildlife biologist. Well, Joel Pencala has been an active rail bird hunter for going on 15 years. A fascinating article. He'll give you the lowdown on where to read it. It's sort of similar to rail bird hunting. Now, the late George Loader and I, shout out to Georgie Loader, man, up there. I tell you, bro, still doing it. We would, again, motor had to be up. Coming down to tidal creeks down there, as Cape May Wetlands Management area all through there, and the rail birds, the clappers would come down, and they're pecking through the benthic gooder, picking up fiddler crabs or whatever, grabbing a killie, and we come around the bend, boom, they get up, shoot, and then either Diesel or Smokey or one of his other labs or Chesapeake's dash off and get the bird. And meanwhile, we're casting for white perch, so it's like a cast and blast thing. Or we just walk the marsh, the meta, as they say. But the rail bird, up in the Mullica, Wading River, but the Mullica River is historically a sora rail go-to. And Jersey used to be one of like the sora rail hunting capital, I guess, in the Mid-Atlantic region. Joel's on the line with us right now. Let's get a little history of the sora. I find it fascinating, people. It's something different. Joel, how you doing, little brother?
I'm doing good. Doing good. Glad to be on the show.
You have me locked, cocked, and ready to rock for the sora. So off air, I'm gonna pound on you to give me some information on a guide or something like this. I gotta go, Joel. I gotta go.
Well, that's the thing. There's not too many guys left doing it in New Jersey, but you know, there's a long history of hunting rails, but hunting soras in particular in New Jersey. door rails are a little different than your clappers. Now, yeah. It's an interesting time because we're getting ready for the season to start here on the 1st. But, you know, the clapper rails are out in the salt marsh. The soras are in the tidal freshwater marshes, and they are in wild rice. So not too many people know this, but the freshwater marshes in New Jersey are still home to wild rice, and that's the primary wow. food and cover and habitat for soras. And you know, that's kind of what sets them apart. They're a smaller bird, but you have to get into those freshwater marshes for the sore rails. And you know, it is a two-man operation usually, using a.
No, go ahead. I'm fired up. You get me? Wow.
Yeah. No, using a poling boat. And
right.
That's kind of one of the things that makes it more difficult. Yeah, you can get out for clappers and walk them up, but the rice marshes are, you can't walk through the rice marshes. You have to be in a boat, which is, you know, that makes it unique. You're actually gunning from a poling skiff. And those of us that are nimble enough, we stand up in the front. So you can imagine you got two guys standing up in a little skinny, you know, 12-foot-long skiff, trying to shoot these little birds that are hopping up out of the wild rice in the marsh. It gets pretty exciting.
Oh, wait a second. That just obviated my participation. Me, 350 pounds plus, all of a sudden standing up in a little dugout and taking a shot. Oh, well, everyone's going swimming in that there, Pincala.
Well, that's just it. You want to make sure you got everything in waterproof containers out there. But mm-hmm. No, you can shoot from sitting position too. You know, there's a lot of guys that shoot from sitting, more comfortable that way. Yeah, the rails are really, you know, they're in that rice, and it's really dependent on the rice. And they are, you know, they do move. They're not here year round. They do migrate as the weather comes. So yeah, it's a lot like the clappers. You got to get them in September or
yeah.
really early October. You're looking for the high tides, and you're trying to get
that.
In these
yeah.
rice marches.
So. Like high tide is it a deal where you have to be out there no matter at first light, or can you like stop for a leisurely breakfast somewhere and hang out if the tide's going to be at 10 o'clock and sort of make a gentleman's sport out of it, like I see in these old Larry Kohler books?
You bet. Well, that's the other thing. It's 100% tide dependent, and you only get a window. You only get a window of a couple hours when you got that high tide. So what happens is as the water drops out of the, you know, the water's coming in, flooding the rice, pushing back up in, and it gives you enough boost so that those boats can get through the rice. The rice is so thick, although it's flooded all the time, it's so thick in there that when it's low tide, you can't push a boat through it. As the tide rises up, you can get further and further, push further and further back through the rice towards the, you know, the high dry ground. And then as the tide goes away, you got to turn right around and come back out of the rice, because you can get stuck in there if you don't keep up with the tide as the tide drops back out.
More and more people, this is sounding like work. I don't know, man.
It is. Well, you know, and that's just it. You mentioned guides. There's only a few outfits that are still doing this down
really?
In South Jersey. You know, there's a couple guys. It's a real, you know, it's a tight little crowd, and most of the guys that have been doing it or the guys that are still pushing boats. I mean, there's a few guys that do it. You know, we do it on Delaware Bay. Like I said, there's just not a lot of guys that are still pushing boats, and it's tough because you have to find guys that can go out and push a boat during a high tide, whatever, you know, whatever day of the week might it be, that's the one that's got the best tide. And that can be a hard thing to find, guys that can get out and do that. It's a lot of fun.
It I've never done it. Again, I've done the clapper thing many a time. We're speaking with Joel Pincala, veteran. He's 15 plus years, whatever, hunting sore rails. We always mention we have a clapper segment on every couple of years or so. A different animal. Now, top waters, like the mullica, the wading, I mean, are those your primary sore areas?
We're hunting, the Maurice, the Morris.
Morris, yeah.
It is typically where we go, but it depends. As long as there's rice marsh, as mm-hmm. long as there's rice in a marsh, there should be soras there. And again, they're really dependent. They do migrate, and there is sora hunting in other states, Connecticut and Rhode Island. I know there's some, but the primary thing is if there's rice, the birds will be there, and they move through. So, mm-hmm. You know, and you can occasionally run into them in different marshes. So even where, you know, my stomping grounds up here in Sussex County, North Jersey, You know, we've been out in the early goose season and had a little sore run by in a marsh, you know, just sitting there waiting for geese.
No kidding.
And so they do get lost occasionally and find their ways, you know, or, you know, I don't know if you've ever seen them out there when you're hunting for clappers, but actually last year I did kill a sora out while we were hunting for clappers.
Wow, no, so, I never noticed one. No, wow. But Joe, here's the other thing too, in that the gentleman I spoke to that have hunted soras, they're from the Burlington County area, and they were hunting again. The one guy said, Tommy P. It's a very short shot, as you said, a short window, and they were on the one group was on group, you know, three or four guys on the wading, which is a great wood duck spot, and the other ones were on the upper mullock. I didn't realize where rice was such a big thing. Is there anything else they'll feed on?
Not, you know, they're not like clappers where they're going to eat crustaceans and crabs and all that kind of stuff. They're, you know, their primary focus is grain. So, and that rice is kind of their primary. I'm sure they'll pick up things as, you know, as necessary, but right. They really prefer the rice over anything else.
And these guys showed me some photos. They had some birds. Listen, the limit is 25, well, I guess, with, Virginia rails, 25 or an agro of Virginias. Are Virginia rails around here?
Oh boy! I mean, you know, again, not something that you see. In all my years of hunting rails, I've never seen one. Never had one come up. You know, I've heard stories of occasionally, you know, guys seeing them or whatever. But again, it's kind of they're just not that many of them around, or at least they're not around where the areas where I'm stomping around.
Yeah, it's like a gallinule. Like, we can get one of those or something. Like, what the hell is it? I've seen photos of them, and I think I've seen one or two in a while, but they're just not around.
Yeah, same thing. I mean, it's kind of it's fun. I mean, at least there's some of those historical birds where, you know how is hunting? Hunting's not going to impact the population of gallinules. I don't think nobody's out there targeting them, but it's just neat that there's some other birds. Yeah. It's kind of like you know, the misfit birds of the upland community, and it's the ones that that are in unique, weird places that you hardly ever see. So
that's
it's
so
kinda
cool.
Neat that there's still seasons for them.
Well, Joe, let's get to the techniques here. Open bore, what size shot? Non toxic shot, naturally. Plug shotguns.
Oh,
what's
the
dealio? How's it go?
Well, anything, the lighter, the better. So most of these shots on soars, you're talking, 10 yards would be a long one, 20 yards would be a long one. So you want, you know, skeet or cylinder chokes, really open, and small guns. You know, the biggest hurdle there being that you obviously need non-toxic shot, and you want to find small shot sizes. You don't want to be out there with, you know, twos or fours. You really want to find, I've been able to find some sevens, some steel sevens. What would be better would be like nines, you know, the finer shot, the better, the more open choke, the better. And then the smaller gauge, the better. You know, I've got a dedicated rail gun that I use for clappers and soras, and it's basically a 20 gauge, you know, Ranger, you know, Sears Ranger, side by side. And it has seen a lot of damage in its life. And I basically brought it to my local gunsmith and said, make them cylinder and cylinder. He opened up the chokes 100%, you know, so that they're just straight cylinder. And, you know, it's the gun that I don't mind getting wet and dirty and salty and everything else. So, that's kind of the thing. No, I wouldn't recommend taking your fancy Beretta or your, you know, any of your high end, guns out on the marsh.
I was going to bring my Perazzi. What the hell?
I was going to say, you want to bring your Perazzi, it's fine by me, but I would caution. I'd make sure you have, something to put oil it down before you put it in a gun case because it's going to take a beating.
Joel, question. On the flush, as an erratic flight, as its clapper cousin?
You know, they're slow, kind of ungainly. The hardest thing is really to get a shot off. A lot of times the rice is pretty thick and pretty high, and, you know, most of the time they don't really clear the grass that high. So not necessarily erratic, more so that it's just kind of a quick – you get a quick little – sight of them, and then they drop back down again. They'd much rather run.
That's it. Oh, yeah, like the pheasants and the quail at the state stocks. Well, Joel, the last thing before I let you go, the eating quality, because I say this, and people think I'm nuts, but I love eating clappers. To me, they're a roast beef, even though they're eating stuff out of benthic goo, you know, the fiddler crabs and whatever. But the soras, I've never had. With the rice diet, they must be as luscious as wood ducks, no?
They're good. They're real good. Yeah, they do not, you know, anybody who's doesn't like the clappers should try a sora. They're tiny. Shoot, the breasts, when you get them taken off, you know, it's maybe the size of a half dollar or something like that. They're smaller even than a woodcock, you know, than a woodcock. But, you know, you fry them in a little bit of butter, a little bit of garlic, maybe a little lemon, salt, pepper, that kind of thing. I just toss them in a pan and fry them up, little bite-sized snacks, and they don't have that, you know, that heavy roast beef flavor. They're much lighter. The color of the meat is much pinker.
Okay,
much lighter, more like a pheasant, that kind of a thing. It doesn't have that darker color like a woodcock or something like that.
People
eat really good.
People interested in the sores. Listen, check out this article. Where is that? I found it by accident. Where is it posted? Your article about sores.
Yeah, I believe it's on Project Upland's website. If you look up sore rail hunting in New Jersey, you pretty much can't avoid it, or my name and that sore rail, it'll pop up there. And I wrote that article a couple of years ago. I just I thought it would be a good idea to kind of introduce people to it. It's a unique sport. It's something that, you know, for me, September 1st is you know, for those of us that follow very tightly, strictly the religious Church of the Outdoors, September 1st is like a holy day for me, because it's the first of the year. I mean, we get out, we shoot rails, we chase geese. It's big juju.
It's my happy new year, man.
it's you know, it's great. I love it. And rails, clapper rails, sore rails is one of those things that, you know, if you don't have doves, like, you know, New Jersey, we can't go hunt doves. It's just a way for me to get out in the field on September 1st and enjoy it. And, get out early in the season and do something fun. So,
Joe, thanks for sharing. Thanks for sharing the sore wealth. Let's just try it. It's something different. You guys, you do the deer, you do the pheasant, you do the quail. You want something different, especially if you're an uplander, waterfowler, something different. And it's September, and there's hardly anyone doing it. Joe, real fast, before I let you go, we're against a hard break. I remember way back when I first started, guys like Freddie Farino, all the guys from, back then it was Fish Game and Shell Fisheries, okay? They had a big September thing, some outdoor writers. I mean, there'd be 30 guys walking the marsh with a couple of dogs. It was a big. Now, if we see, God, two or three people over the course of two or three hunts besides us, that's a lot. Nobody seems to do it anymore.
Yep. Disappearing, but, you know, we've got a little crew for clappers. We usually go every year, so.
There you go, man. Well, Joe, thanks for joining us. Hope to see you out in the marsh one of these days.
Sounds good. Thanks for having me on. I had a lot of fun.
Take care, brother.
All right, see ya.
Yes, Soros. Man, that sounds like fun. I'm going to talk to Joe a little while from now off air, trying to track down some guides. Man, this sounds like something I cannot pass up. Me and the lovely Dee Marie cannot pass up. She's always, pun intended, always game for something else to hunt. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's talk station. Fox on Tech.
Are you ready to take your face scan out to the ball game? You can leave your tickets at home or in your wallet app. Major League Baseball is trying something new with biometrics at the home games of the Philadelphia Phillies. Using the MLB app, fans can send in their own selfies ahead of time, and then when it's time to walk into the ballpark for their game, technology matches them with their selfie to authenticate and clears them to proceed. They call it go-ahead entry, and MLB says it's been years in the making. They debuted it at the stadium in Philadelphia last month, but they insist facial authentication isn't facial recognition. There is no scanning of crowds looking for a specific face to identify, and combined with AI used to eliminate the need to search through bags, purses, or pockets, the league says they have got the most advanced security system on the market. With Fox on Tech, I'm Evan Brown, Fox News.
We're rolling out store-wide savings this Labor Day at the Home Depot. Like up to $15 off Scott's WinterGuard Turf Builder. Because long weekends are all about getting outside, putting down roots for the fall, and feeding a lawn you can enjoy all year round. Shop Labor Day savings at the Home Depot and get up to $15 off Scott's WinterGuard Turf Builder. The Home Depot. How doers get more done.
Staples has big savings on everything you need for back to school or stocking up the office. Save on all your school essentials from notebooks to markers. Save on everything you need for travel like luggage, portable tech, and travel size personal items. Plus, save on signs, banners, and posters from Staples Print and Marketing Services. And now at Staples, you can save even more with $10 off document printing when you spend $40 or more. Get everything for the office and the classroom for less at Staples. Ends 9/30. Exclusions and restrictions apply. See associate or visit staples.com/print. For details.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Yeah, back inside Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Weekend of September 2nd and 3rd, hunting season are underway. Yesterday, Railbird, my clappers and soars and gallinals, whatever it is, and the statewide September Canada goose season open. Things are underway. Next Saturday is the opening of the early archery season. Select DMZs around the state. And by the way, watch those zones now with the antler restrictions. Like I said in the opening segment, these may be going away. My opinion only, as I've said forever, good. Good. Okay, that's my thing. But some changes coming. There's going to be some public meetings on that. Now, the statewide season does open on the 30th of September, but we have a Youth Archery Day coming up, and United Bow Hunters of New Jersey is running a youth mentor hunt. It's going to be, it's actually the fourth annual. Whoa. And that's going to be the 23rd on Youth Day. Joining us on the line right now, cool guy, badass, John Erndl, president, United Bow Hunters of New Jersey. I say repeat president. He's done it before. He's doing a kick-ass job. Johnny, how you doing, brother?
Good. How you doing, Tom?
Lock, cocked, and ready. I said, Tom, here, you know, I love my fish and everything. I said, this is where I'm torn like an amoeba. You ever see a paramecium, how they break in all sorts of parts? September, October, November, Erndl, I'm a mess. It's like April and May. I'm a mess. But that's par for the course. John, this looks like a great event. Fourth annual. Pretty successful, huh?
Yeah, we've been very successful with it. You know, we've had some great kids come out and be successful and stick with it is what the whole premise behind it is.
Now, John, getting this off the ground, what was the brainchild behind it? You guys sitting around just jawing, saying, how do we get more kids involved or what's the dealio?
Well, what happened was, you know, we know from the division that license sales are down, you know, a lot of people aren't getting into hunting anymore, and they don't know where to start. And we actually had a mother contact us. Her son put himself through Hunter Ed.
Wow.
And
wow.
None of the family hunts. So we said, you know what? We got to do something because there's got to be kids out there that want to hunt but don't know where to get started, and that's how the whole thing came to fruition.
Back in the day, even though growing up in an inner city, you know, from, I guess, ages, you know, 5, 6 up, I was always fascinated with hunting because my cousins on the first floor, Mario and Cosmo, they had beagles in the back. And even though it was inner city, we knew a lot of people, like on our block. Back there in Newark, the blocks were about 400 yards long. You know, we know that the city block. A lot of people hunted, especially small game. So, and bow hunting was still not as popular as it was in the burgeoning years of the 80s into the 90s, but there were guys that bow hunted, and you idolize these people, but hunting was still in the fabric, unfortunately, of the society. Unfortunately, John, that's waning, where Central and South Jersey, more South Jersey, I say, and some areas in the North, like Sussex and Warren County, maybe Northern Passaic, and Arizona Hunted and Morris, still, hunting is still, you know, there. It's like an endeavor. You know what I mean? But yep, you're right. No, it has waned, and the youth with the phones and the this and the that and all these distractions, I'm surprised any of them even bother to hunt anymore or even have an interest in it.
It's amazing. There are kids out there that have an interest. I think they look at YouTube and places like that and see hunting shows, and they take an interest, but their dad doesn't hunt. Their uncles don't hunt. They don't know how to start. So that's where, you know, this came about. And it's been really successful for us. And it's kept kids getting into hunting.
Yeah, John, one thing I ran into several times when discussing things, we don't want any weapons in a house. And I look at these people. You're educated people, right? Professional. We don't want weapons in a house. I said, you guys eat meat? Yeah, we have steak knives. Well, you know, sometimes the absurdity of it. the lack of reasoning. It's crazy. So, Don, this is the fourth annual.
It is.
It's for youngsters 10 to 16. Go into the particulars, John. What's the deal? They show up, what, 9 a.m. at Garden State Arches? Then what happens?
Yeah, so they show up at 9 a.m. We pair them up with a mentor who's going to go through the particulars of shooting. If they don't have their own equipment, we have crossbows available for them to use.
Wow.
So they go through the shooting with their mentor, sitting, you know, because most of them are going to be in ground blinds,
mm-hmm.
you know, sitting, shooting at real 3D deer targets inside. We have a person from Hunter Ed come in and talk about shot placement and everything.
Great.
We're going to have a CO come in and talk to them about the different rules and stuff, you know, because we want to get them off on the right foot. We don't want them to be afraid of a conservation officer, you know, but they're there to help too.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have a full day. They have lunch. After lunch, we take them out, and we have pre-baited locations that have been up and going since we got them going now. And they see deer. Some have been successful with shooting deer. Then when they come back, we treat them to venison cooked different dishes.
Oh, man, that sounds like a hell of a day.
Yeah, it's all complete. You know, the kid gets the whole spectrum of what it is to hunt, like at almost like at a mini deer camp.
Yeah, now, John. Still, even at my age, I see a deer, I get all, you know, I just get discombobulated to be in a hunting situation like that and never done it before. Here you are, you pass the hunter safety, goes, you're ready to go, and they're right in front of your deer, and it's like the moment of truth. The kids must go crazy.
Oh, they love it. You know what they. They instantly bond with each other. Most of the kids don't even know each other that mm-hmm. come to this, and they bond with each other because they're there for a common goal. And, you know, I have to say, last year, two of the mentors complimented two of the older kids that we had, sat in the blind, did not look or go on their phone one time.
Hallelujah.
They were so interested in the squirrel and, mm-hmm. you know, a turkey went by and a fox went by another one. And, you know, then when the deer came in and, you know, their eyes got as big as silver dollars, and,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
which is great.
And again, even if they get out of it, they've had the experience. And who knows, with the R3 program, for example, reactivate. Who knows, 5, 6, 7 years down the line, they you know, may get into it again.
Absolutely. But, and the thing we look at it is, It's one less anti-hunter. They
exactly
know
right.
what the whole. They know the real gist behind hunting.
Hunting, wildlife management, the whole thing. It's all encompassing. We're speaking with John Erndl, president, United Bow Hunters of Jersey. Topic is September 23rd, the Youth Mentor Hunt. It's the fourth annual. It's going to be at Garden State Archers. Age restrictions 10 to 16, stands, blinds, everything's going to be there. They're going to be fed. The kids are going to get instruction. And these are seasoned mentors. And, John, I can't thank the UBNJ enough, which we're proud members, to what you guys are doing and gals are doing. It's phenomenal.
You know, if we don't do it, it's going to go away faster than people think.
Well, John, let me ask you this. Are there still, I know it's limited participation. Are there still spots open?
We still have 4 spots open, looking for 4 more kids. And if the boy or girl are 14 or over, if they don't have hunter ed, we can get them their apprentice license. Because with the archery,
boom,
at 14 and over, you there can you get go. An apprentice license.
Just a great job all around. John Erndl, for more information, where do people go? UBNJ.org?
UBNJ.org, our Facebook page. It's all up on both of them.
John, pleasure to have you back on Rack and Fin. You're up and around and just absolutely back to Erndl at 99.900 miles an hour.
I'm trying.
Okay, John, we'll see you soon. I'll catch you out there.
Thanks, Tom.
We'll see you. UBNJ scores it again. Doing a great job. Again, to me, that's a formative year. People say, you know, 2, 3, 4 years old. Again, not that I'm some sort of whatever. To me, it's, you know, the 7, 8, 9, 10, 12 years old. With the kids, you know, they're seeing again, they're interacting with other kids. Are they going to be, you know, future psychos? They're going to be responsible people. They're going to have a love of the outdoors. They have to be introduced at that critical age. To me, 7, 8, 9, right there, that those 3 years, you're wide-eyed, your mind is a sponge. and you get the youngsters out there at that age into the early teens. You know, you have 15, 16, 17 things, whatever. And like I said, they may get back into it if they indeed get away from it. Chances are they won't. 50-50. There we go. Okay, grab that cup, grab that Red Bull. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio. Whoa, 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 whoa. Trapping season coming up. Be right back.
Summertime at the Jersey Shore. The glitz and glamour of Atlantic City's casinos. Jersey's best pizza on the Ocean City Boardwalk. Great rides in Wildwood. And miles of bumper-to-bumper traffic. WPG Talk Radio 95.5 wants to keep you moving with expanded summertime traffic updates Friday afternoon through your ride back Sunday evening. WPG Talk Radio 95.5, South Jersey's talk station.
Fox News, I'm Chris DeMeo. Transportation Secretary Pete Buttigieg says his department is working to ensure holiday travel is as disruption-free as possible.
Like millions of Americans, I'm traveling this busy Labor Day weekend to be with family. And I know so many Americans are hitting the road or heading to airports to do the same.
Most Americans will travel by car. With his poll numbers rising, 2024 presidential contender Vivek Ramaswamy facing heat from his rivals on foreign policy, but the Republican says his ideas would work.
I believe in standing for American interests, asserting American interests, but only where it advances the U.S. interest. That's very different from other candidates that would sooner send troops to defend an invasion across somebody else's border than to use troops to defend across the invasion on our own southern border in this country.
America's listening to Fox News.
Your WPG Atlantic City Electric AccuWeather forecast for South Jersey. High rip current risk remains in effect through Saturday evening. Coastal flood advisory in effect through early Saturday morning. Clear and cool overnight. Good weather for sleeping. Low 51. Mostly sunny Saturday. High 81. Abundant sunshine and warmer Sunday. High 93. Labor Day Monday. Mostly sunny. Hot and humid. The high 96. I'm AccuWeather's Drew Shannon on WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Well, again, the Happy New Year thing going on between the Railbirds and the September Canada Goose season. One thing, man, it's going to be here before you know it as time is flying by. November 15th, great date on the calendar. The trapping season opens. A lot of generalities in here, like on the pheasant stock and quail stock wildlife management area, no snaring, no cable restraints. But basically, again, otter and beaver, there's going to be later dates. But your raccoon, your fox, your possum, man, it's just a coyote. It's going so fast. And truth be told, haven't been a hardcore trapper for decades. Just don't have the time for it to do it the right way. And the respect for the animals always tantamount. And I just had to give it up, but just loved the 4 o'clock, 4:30 in the mornings out there checking the lines. It was just a fantastic experience. From what I understand, the numbers of trappers in New Jersey, at least those taking the trapping courses, is on the rise, albeit slowly, but still on the rise. Now, DEP's Fish and Wildlife trapper education classes are now available, and there's going to be two in the Prime Rack and Fin Radio listening area. One is the Tuckahoe Wildlife Management Area, Lenape Farms, the Estelle Manor in Atlantic County. It's going to be September 16th and 17th. And at the James Berg Field and Stream Club up there in Manchester in Southern Ocean County, October 26th and 29th. Now, there are two other ones up there at the Hackettstown Hatchery up there in Warren County. Join us on the line right now. One of the instructors there, he's been with Rack and Fin from the get-go. Great outdoor products, tremendous deer hunter, one of the top trappers, I would say, in the Northeast, if not the entire U.S. of A., travels around, gives seminars all over the country, is Ronnie Jones from ACP Rednecks Pride Outdoors. He's also a full-time wildlife control agent, so the man knows his fur bearers especially. We're going to talk about these trapper education classes, the benefit of trapping to wildlife populations, the health of the environment on the overall. And to sign up now because they do get crazy. Now, Ronnie and, hey, Newt, you tuned in, Newt. They have this is an uber professional grade snaring school in January. Snaring and trapping school. It is something down there by Newt Sterling's place. Ronnie, I tell you, your calendar is so friggin' full. Thanks for joining us, man. November 15th is on the way, brother.
It's coming. It's coming. But, you know, you just mentioned the doggone railbirds. I was looking the other day at some of the spots. I don't think I'm going to be able to push through that stupid rice this year. I'm getting too old.
Yeah, you're not too old, Ron. I was in your shape when I was playing ball up at the University of Maine at Presque Isle. That was how many decades ago? You keep going, man. What's that song, Baddie Money? Keep my motor running? That is Jonesy. He is on the thing. Well, Jonesy, real fast, with the seasons now, November 15th, let's touch on that right away. The restrictions on the wildlife managers that are stocked with birds, correct?
Yes, the wildlife management areas where they're stocked with quail and pheasant, the only thing we can use on those sites will be dog-proof traps, cage right. traps, and if the season, the northern zone, November 15th, you can set your mink and muskrat sets.
Okay.
In the south zone, we can't set our mink and muskrat sets until December 1st.
Oh, December 1st. Okay. I'm looking at Ronnie, I'll tell you, it's people don't realize how important, and there's not that many guys, I mean, just not that many people do anymore from the heydays of, what was that, 77 through 81 or 82?
Right.
The
right.
importance of trapping fur bear population management and for the health of the environment and the overall, actually for the safety of the general public. Wouldn't you agree?
Well, yeah, absolutely. That was the reason, you know, when we lost the foothold trap back in 84 and stopped using it in 86, the raccoon population built so fast that's in the early 90s, that's when the rabies came in.
Yeah.
Because the raccoon population tripled. And what people do not realize is that the fur trapper is the free wildlife control. They're the ones that's building the wall for human wildlife conflicts, you know, where mm-hmm. you can either pay me or you can allow me a trap for free. I mean,
right.
And that's the it's one thing that most people do not realize. You have to keep predators under control. Now, you know, we don't want to wipe them out. No, we don't want to wipe them out, but we need to keep them under control. The coyote is building up numbers.
Oof, that's a lie. Oof.
You know, and I just did a just talked to a reporter a couple weeks ago, and we was talking about the coyote, and I said, look, we have the historical facts already. All you need to do is look out to the West Coast, and then look at the Midwest, San Francisco, L.A., then come on over to the St. Louis and Chicago and Detroit. Now come on into Philadelphia and New York. Now these are cities we're talking about,
right.
And they've got coyote problems. These coyotes, what?
Yeah,
you know, we're getting calls now. The calls are up left and right now. I mean, everybody is calling me. They saw a coyote in their yard. Your coyote, you know, Morristown, Haddonfield, these areas there up north. The coyote is an animal that just adapts, and he adapts right. quick. And once that, what people don't realize, the highest fox populations in the state is inside the towns now.
Right.
Okay. Why? Because
Ron, there's reds everywhere. You see them in the suburbs nothing.
Yeah. Well, for a long time, it was out. When the coyote first started moving in, it brought the mange, number one. And number two, we're talking about 20 years ago.
Right.
And the second thing was mange was the first. And then, obviously, the little red fox, he doesn't compete well with the big old coyote. So we here in the South, we lost our reds for quite a few years. But they're starting to learn how to I don't know if they're learning how to compete with the coyote or if they're learning how to just stay the heck out of his way. But we're getting good numbers again. Gray foxes are building up. The problem with the gray fox is he's not a fox out in the open like everybody sees the red.
Right.
If you want to find the gray, you know, over there towards you, all my area here, get into the thick stuff, you know, get into the briar patches and what have you.
Ron, also with the raccoons and the coyotes, even, you know, the possums, the impact they have on wildlife itself as being predators, wiping out waterfowl nest eggs, grabbing onto the stocked pheasants, all stuff with fawns. I mean, it's the impact is can be severe at times.
Well, I mean, last year was just a nightmare after nightmare on the stocked pheasant grounds. Pheasant hunt, and I pheasant hunt, you know that.
Yeah.
But everybody knowing I was a trapper coming up to me said, we got to do something about the foxes. And I laughed and I said, yeah, the foxes are a pain for the red foxes, so is the coyote. But the biggest predator out there, or a bigger predator, people don't realize, is the raccoon.
Yep.
Turkeys take a big hit. It's not only that. It's just, I had a couple guys say to me, raccoons aren't going to kill a pheasant. I said, do they kill chickens? plus the raccoon, the skunk, are big on ground bird nesting depredation. So Ducks Unlimited has programs out to control the skunks and the raccoons and the foxes.
I believe Delta Waterfowl does as well.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of... I'd like to get some of them contracts if I could one of these days. The ground nesting birds are a major problem because of the eggs being destroyed. Mm-hmm. Okay, then you have your other predation, you have your other predator problems. The poor rabbit, he doesn't stand a chance with the birds of prey and the foxes. And what a lot of people don't realize is we see it a lot in our urban and suburban area where there's baby rabbits in the little holes in the ground. Yeah, everybody knows how they are. And folks will call up and say, there's a raccoon came and killed all the young rabbits. And I said, yeah,
that's what happens what they all do. The time. That's like the scorpion and the frog. That's what I do. Yeah, yes, that's what they have.
That's what they are. That's what they are, yep.
Yeah, join us online is Ron Jones, ACP Rednecks Pride Outdoors, professional wildlife control agent, expert trapper. With the topic is now the trapper education class is now available. It's going to be two in the Rackfin Radio listening area. The Tuckahoe Wildlife Management at the Lenape Farms. That's in Estelle Manor, Atlantic County, September 16th and 17th. And up there at the Jamesburg Field and Stream Club, Manchester in Southern Ocean County, October 26th and 29th. Ron, we only have a couple of minutes left in this segment. What does a trapping course entail? It's a two-day dealio. What happens?
Yeah, what they do is they come in, we go through the stations, what we call stations. In other words, we're covering the laws. That's the first thing you got to realize. Trapping is the most regulated outdoor activity in New Jersey. So there's a lot of laws. So we really go through what the laws are so people don't get themselves messed up. All right. But we show them all the different types of traps and all the methods that's out there and all the ways to get it done. Okay. We spend the first day and then we'll come back the second day and we'll go through the courses again. And then there's going to be some skinning and there's going to be fur handling and a test and what have you. People will come and say, why do I have to be here for 2 days? And I'll say to them, listen, I guarantee you at the end of this course, you'll think it's one of the best courses you've ever gone through. And I have had very, very few people I've been an instructor since 1987. So very few folks will say this wasn't worth it. Most people will come up and say the best course
Ron,
put on.
I agree. When I took it in, I guess it was 1979, and shout out to Bob Byrne. Last time I saw him, it was at a SHOT Show in Houston, and I said, yeah, I pretty much know wildlife. I have to take this course, blah, blah, blah. I have to take this course. It's BS, a pain in the ass. Ron, I walked out of there the second day. It was held down at the Assinpink Wildlife Management. Ron, I went out of there, and I said I was surprised at how much I didn't know. And it was just really opened my eyes to the whole specter of what's involved in wildlife population dynamics and the role trapping plays.
Well, Tom, that's you brought up a point because it used to be, years ago that people got into trapping because their grandfather, their dad, their uncle, whoever. Okay,
right.
There was a trapping background, and they came with a trapping background, in other words. We laughed about it. My son. He took his test at 12, but he had been trapping since 8. Okay, because he was with his dad, right? Today, in today's world, most people that come to the class have no trapping background whatsoever.
True.
They don't know anything really other than what they've heard. The number one reason we get is when we're asking, why did you come to the trapping course? I want to become a better outdoorsman.
Bang. Bingo. Spot on.
People get upset when I say that. But the truth of the matter is, we have people that's been bow hunting their whole life, or deer hunting, whatever. They come to the course, and when I say you're going to be a better outdoorsman from this, they'll tell me, no, it's not going to happen that way. And I'll see them a year later, and they'll put their hand out, they'll shake my hand, and they'll say, you know, Ron, I am seeing things now that I never saw in my life, even though I've been in the woods out there my whole life. And the reason is simply this. You've got to see everything.
You're right.
You have to see everything to become a good trapper. Your bubble has to encompass where the mice are at, where the chipmunks are at, where the birds are at. The seeds, you're looking at the little seeds on the ground that's chewed. Why is it important to a trapper? Well, because if there's prey species there, then we know the predator or the fur bearer is going to be there.
Okay, Ron, the things you have to notice. And I, like I said, I thought I was pretty good. I thought I was real good. Oh, not happening. Okay, listen, let's go to njfishandwildlife.com. Think about it. This trapping course is incredibly educational, really, as Mr. Jones says, will make you a better outdoorsman, outdoors person, however, whatever pronouns you have to use these days. Again, it's going to be at Tuckahoe Wildlife Management at the Lenape Farms in Estelle Manor, Atlantic County, September 16th and 17th, or at the Jamesburg Field and Stream Club, Manchester, up there in Southern Ocean County, October 26th and 29th. Well, Ryan, thanks for joining us. Great to see you again. Hopefully, we're going to be seeing you in the woods and maybe along I don't know, Ron. I can't remember the last time except prowling around a muskrat marsh. I haven't done that in ages. What do you think?
Well, the plan's on it this year, but, you know, again, we don't know if we're going to make it or not, but we're going to try.
Okay, Ron, you take care. Best, everybody. Oh, Ron, do me a favor. Give that ACP site.
It's ACP Wildlife. I forgot what it is. ACP WildlifePro.net.
Okay, I'm sending you a check for some trout lure. You know that.
Okay, buddy.
See you, bud.
Okay.
Bye.
All right.
Yeah, trapping will, I'm telling you, it's just you really become like you morph into something that, and when you get out of the woods or you get out of the marsh, oh, you turn back human or something. It is amazing. Be right back. Rack and Fin Radio.
WPG Talk Radio 95.5 FM and 1450 AM. South Jersey's talk station. The
original. This fall, treat your taste buds to an authentic AC culinary experience during Atlantic City Restaurant Week, returning October 1st through the 6th. During this six-day celebration of the region's diverse dining scene, enjoy special multi-course fixed-price lunches for just $20.23 and dinner for only $40.23 at a wide range of restaurants, from gourmet to casual and from seafood and steakhouse to international. Come play. Come dine and indulge in only in AC experiences during Atlantic City Restaurant Week. Really fun, really delicious, and a really good deal. Visit acrestaurantweek.com to find an updated list of participating restaurants, view lunch and dinner menus, and book your reservations. Presented by CRDA.
Rack and Fin Radio with Tom P. WPG Talk Radio 95.5.
Again, Happy New Year. That'll do for this week on Rack and Fin Radio with me, Tom P. Get out and enjoy great weather for the holiday weekend. Fishing is off the charts, as you know, fresh and salt water. That's a little bit bumpy out there early this week, huh? Ha ha. Yeah, getting banged around. That was, I need a kidney belt on that one. God bless America. God bless our troops. God bless our first responders and law enforcement. Happy Labor Day to all. Get out and enjoy. See you next week. Rack and Fin Radio.